Following program is sponsored by the Islamic Media Foundation, sharing the guidance of Allah through broadcast media and the internet.
Right, it's not today, that's just a great show. Yeah, it's the principles of Islam, the basics of Islam. The Sheikh Yusuf Esther, it's just a great show. Every Friday, 2 p.m. It's not today, with Sheikh Yusuf Esther. This is Islam Today, with Sheikh Yusuf Esther.
Bismillah wa alhamdulillah. والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله ما بعد. I would like, first of all, to let you know that what we're going to talk about tonight is considered subjective, and this means that people have different opinions about it, and it's all based on how you look at something. So in order for us to make any progress, we need to start with some common ground. Because frequently when people get into arguments and debates on these subjects, a lot of bad things come out of it because of a lot of misunderstanding and a lot of hard feelings and so on. So how you can avoid that is to agree on some certain premise before you get started, and then try to stay within certain parameters. And the thing that we'll agree on, first of all, is such things as we'll all agree if we point this way and say the direction is what? Okay, we'll agree on that, you see. And if we point this way, it means down. And we're never going to point up like this, and we're not going to say that's down. Unless we make a mistake, that can happen, right? But what we're talking about is so that somebody won't come along and say, no, I call this down and I call this up. So if you do, there are certain things we need to just make some adjustments to the meanings of words. But certainly, and this is my main point about this subject, is we would never say that both directions are the same. This is not considered a mistake in language, a mistake in understanding, a mistake in concept. This is a mistake in sanity, because this is not logical. That direction and that direction are not the same. So we'll start out by mentioning a hadith. There is a hadith which says that the Prophet, peace be upon him, said, my companions are as the stars in the heavens, and whichever of them you would follow, you would be rightly guided. Okay? Now let's listen to the meaning. That sounds like a nice thing to say, doesn't it? Somebody is a disciple of a prophet, and he's certainly a good person, somebody with high character, high morals, good qualities, and you're saying that, you know, you wouldn't go wrong by following these guys. Any one of them you'd choose, you'd be doing a good thing. But if you really analyze it and think about what's being said here, it does go against common sense. How? Okay? Because common sense tells us if you're trying to go south and you follow the highway signs that say north, you're not going to go south. That's right. And long before they had highway signs, people followed the signs in the heavens. Since man was able to look up at the sky and say, golly, that's what it looked like last night at this time, and he figured out where he was and started traveling, people looked at the moon and the stars to get their bearings to understand where they were going and where they came. And you cannot follow the constellation called Cancer, or the constellation called Leo, and get the same results as if you follow another one. In other words, I'm going to go this way. I see those stars over there. I'm going to go that way. But, oh, wait a minute, I want to follow these. And you're saying I can follow these in any direction and I'll still be going the right way. I won't be. So it's not a logical statement. It's fabricated. It's not true. He didn't say that. In fact, we found six hadiths, very similar, and one of the key ones that stands out in my mind, it says, my companions are the stars in the heaven, whichever one of you follow, you'll be rightly guided. And a man will come after me who is worse than the Antichrist, and his name will be Muhammad ibn Idris. You know this? You've probably read the book of Sheikh al-Albani about this, right? Because he's the one who exposed this falseness. Nobody is worse than the Antichrist when he comes. There will be nobody worse than him. He will produce the worst calamity or fitna that will ever happen on the earth. That's a fact. We as Muslims accept that. So how could we all of a sudden accept that somebody could be worse than the worst? That's not possible. Again, this doesn't make sense. Follow what I'm saying? Okay. Who is Muhammad ibn Idris? That's the key. This is a person that a certain group of people didn't like because those who followed him exposed the mistakes of their scholar. So rather than accept the mistakes, rather than accept that they were wrong or that their scholar could have made some errors, they eulogized their scholar and put him up on a very high pedestal and then lied and fabricated this story about Muhammad ibn Idris. That somebody is defending a losing position. They're wrong, and they can't accept that they're wrong, so instead of saying, okay, I'm wrong, or at least I'll shut up, they lied and fabricated a story. Now, here's what's so dangerous about this for Muslims. We as Muslims know that our Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, did say in an authentic hadith, if anybody attributes a lie to me, say something I didn't say it, he can go ahead and reserve his seat in the hellfire. And may Allah save all of us from that. Ameen. Now, if you're with me, Muslims are with me, what I'm talking about, now for the benefit of the non-Muslims, there are a number of things that people have said to defend their position when they were totally wrong, and they couldn't deal with the fact that this is the wrong thing because it means all my other conclusions are also wrong. And I hold a PhD, and I don't want to lose my position as a fellow at the university. I don't want to lose my credibility. I've written thesis, I've written documents on these subjects, and I don't want to back up and say, oops. So better for me to go over with some other guys who got the same egg on their face. Let's make up some crap and throw it out here on everybody. Sorry for that. You didn't know what that means. Good. You do? Tough. What would you say, you know, to somebody who makes a statement that's obviously stupid and obviously wrong, and yet he believes it? What do you say to somebody who says something that's just really dumb? Okay? If somebody tells you that his grandson is also his grandmother, what do you want to think about that guy? There's no logic in that. That's stupid. You don't even want to sit with this guy, right? I mean, you're at the lunch table, and you hear this guy talking, you're going, why did I do this? That's right? Okay, now you get this. In the 70s, a journalist said, one-fifth of all the people who have ever lived on the earth are alive today. Wow. One-fifth of all the people that ever lived on the earth are alive today. Wow, let's say it again. One-fifth of all the people that ever lived on the earth are alive today. Well, we have a lot of people alive today. Wow, look how many people are alive. And at that time, there was probably like 3.5 billion, 4 billion people on the earth. And they were saying, wow, that's, according to our numbers, one-fifth of all the people that ever lived. You know what? People picked that up and ran with it. That was in the news. It became a very famous statement. People were talking about this subject called so much. It became a subject for people to talk about in universities, people writing papers about this subject. But guess what? It's fabricated. They just made it up. He just said it. And it worked. You know how long human beings been on the earth? Thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years. Millions of people have been destroyed in floods, millions destroyed in volcanic eruptions, millions of them destroyed by hurricanes and earthquakes and so on, right? And more people came and more people got destroyed and more people came. So why you said something like that? Sell newspapers. It worked. You say, okay, that's a small point. But if somebody told you that human beings came from monkeys, how many in here would accept that right now? Human beings have evolved from the primate. If you accept this idea, raise your hand. You accept that? Really? Are you a human being? You evolved from a monkey? Really? Can you like swing from a tree or something else? No trees, otherwise you can do it? So, if you accepted a statement like this, that humans evolved from primates. I would ask you if you had any kind of an evidence for that, or a proof. And I don't want to put him on the spot or anybody else, because I don't like that when people do that to me either. And if he was up here and wanted to take the challenge, it's different. So just in general, I'm going to ask myself, how did I come with this kind of a conclusion? Did you just wake up thinking that? Just all of a sudden one day you're walking down the street and said, no, how did human beings get here? See, did we come by extraterrestrial spacecraft? No, I'm going to rule that out. Did we evolve from chickens? Nope, I don't think so. Monkeys, that's it. We just came from monkeys. I don't think that's how people got that. What happens is, and our prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, told us that all human beings are born in a natural state of submission to God. They're already born in this state when they're born. But it is the environment and their people and their background and so on that causes them to be changed into these different religions. And we're talking here about Judaism, Christianity, Hinduism, Buddhist, Muslim, all the rest of it. These are different religions. I submit to you tonight, and the reason I brought that up, when I'm supposed to be talking about creation and evolution and so on, I'm going to submit to you that, in fact, those people who don't accept creation, but rather accept evolution, are nothing more really than just another religion. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because a religion always has some theory associated with it, doesn't it? Theory? Is there theory involved in evolution? Yes, thank you very much. That's why it's called Darwin's proof. Darwin's facts. Or Darwin's theory. Okay. When did he come up with this idea, and how did it come about? Do you know anything about this idea? He didn't actually say human beings came out of monkeys. Although he accepted the idea of evolution, didn't bother him. That wasn't what he was talking about. He was very impressed about the way certain birds had developed their beaks. They were called finches, on the Galapagos Islands off the coast of Ecuador. And when he was there, he observed that from island to island, according to the various ecological structure, in other words, if it's grain, or if it was a wooded area, or if it was a lot of rocks, that the birds living there, their beaks fit that niche. They could eat there, they could survive there because they were built like that. So when he went from island to island, he theorized that these birds had evolved from some primitive bird, and then this was a more advanced bird, and this is a more advanced bird, and so on. One of the things he kind of overlooked was they all were alive at the same time. So that's not evolution, is it? Not in the sense where something evolves over a period of time into something else, right? This is a different matter. As a matter of fact, in October, that same month, October, in 1998, there was a PBS special about the effects of El Nino. Who knows what's El Nino? You know what I'm talking about? That weather condition that changes things around the planet. Weird. What happened, all of a sudden, there was a tremendous amount of water being released in the Galapagos Islands, and some of those islands changed their structure, and wind blew things from seeds from other areas, and so they had different plants that they had never had before, and they had a lot of foliage that they didn't used to have before, and others became more dry than they had before, and a lot of things changed. And in this special, they accidentally, oops, slipped and mentioned the fact that within 6 months, not 6 million years, as Darwin had supposed, but within 6 months, when the eggs hatched, the bills, the beaks of the birds had changed to be able to eat what was on their island. Hello, Darwin, where are you? This is an amazing thing. You're saying this can happen that quick. How? According to the Muslim, this isn't possible. It can't happen unless Allah causes it to happen. He can do that because he can do what he wants to do. There's no problem for him. For us, you believe there was somebody who was born about 2,000 years ago. He was born miraculous birth. He had no father, but he had a mother. Miraculous birth, and there was a man, and he claimed to be a prophet. Why would these people believe something like that? Can you imagine this? Why would they accept an idea that a man can be born from a woman and no father? But by the same token, when you start telling me the humans grow out of monkeys, that's also kind of weird because monkeys still exist. Hello? I just told you about the birds. Monkeys still exist. And after you read this book and you find the lies that they've used to try to prove their point, you won't believe any more than I do that we came from monkeys. Where we came from, I'm not trying to prove that point tonight. But I'm telling you, when you see some of the things, give me an example. A number of years ago, somebody, some professor decided, no, I got to prove my point. Now look what he did. He fabricated. He took part of a very old monkey, part of the skull, and some other parts of things from a human, and buried him in the ground, and then later come along and act like he discovered it. Now, you got to, you know, to be honest, you got to be a little bit sick to do something like that, don't you agree? Isn't that a little bit weird? This is not a theory anymore. This is called deception. And people bought into it for a while, and then they did some thinking about it, and they did some studying, and they did something called carbon dating. And they said, oops, it doesn't work. First of all, even the monkey skull itself wasn't that old. It wasn't even a couple thousand years. Not the millions of years that they tried to suppose it was. How many of you heard about Nebraska Man? Anybody heard about Nebraska Man? Yeah, that was a cool one. Listen to this. In the early part of the last century, they came up with, oh, we found the remains of Nebraska Man. This proves that on the earth right here in the United States of America, millions of years ago, upright man was walking along, and here he is, and they drew pictures of him. They had a place in a museum, they had drawings of it, and they had all kinds of, you know, relics that they were showing in association with this big, big discovery. The huge discovery that they had out here to show everybody, and you could go look at it and see this proof without any doubt. This was the missing link, the connection between who? Man and monkey. Wow. How many people wrote articles on more than 50 based their dissertation on this subject of Alaska Man? Nebraska Man. Could have been Alaska anyway, for all it's worth. Until in 1939. Somebody observed that, gee whiz, these remains look strangely like some remains we have in another museum. Let's go check these remains against those remains. And they were exactly the same without even a little bit of doubt. So these remains were the same as those. And guess what it was? Are you ready? One tooth. That's all it was. One tooth from a prehistoric pig. Oops. Okay. Well, anyway. So what did they do? Before, big hype in the newspaper. Big hype on the media. Everywhere you would look, Nebraska Man approves. Okay, good. But when they discovered a mistake, did anybody say one word anywhere in any media, any publication? Did anybody write any doctor's thesis about liars and fakers? No. Silence. Why? Hidden agenda. There's a hidden agenda behind all of this. I'm going to tell you what it is real clear. There's a word in the Arabic language, asabiyya. Asabiyya is what it's really all about. Prejudice, racism. Islam is forbidden. I'm disappointed when I hear a lot of Muslims from other countries ask me about the people who enter Islam. We have a huge number, by the way, all over the world are coming into Islam these days. And I don't say that to just throw that out as a commercial or anything. I'm just telling you it's happening. It's a real happening. Tens of thousands of people have entered into Islam. in the last few years. And I've witnessed this with my eyes and the camera too, just in case you doubt it. And there's some tapes there, you can watch them do it. But along the way, some of the Muslims, born Muslims, have asked me, and when I visit other countries, they say, yes, but are they black or are they white? For a Muslim, a dear friend of mine from Egypt, I was eating with him last night at his home, and he said, somebody asked me a question and I don't know what to say to them. I said, what did they ask you? He said, well, somebody from my country asked me about Muslims coming into Islam in America, and they said, are they mostly black or white? He said, I never thought of this color in my life, of my whole life. I never thought about a Muslim having a color. But where you find that is where you have what we'll call, excuse me for saying this, Western mentality. But so anyway, what we're talking about now is another thing I want to mention, that in fact, it's not really Western mentality. This is nothing more than the old Roman religion of 2,000 years ago. The Romans were very, very prejudiced. And they thought they were better than the other people on the earth. And wherever they went and they spread their civilization, one of the things they did was force people to enter their religion, or they couldn't be a full Roman citizen. You could keep your other religion, but you couldn't be a citizen. Or you could join in and still sneak over and do your other religion on the side, but you needed to join the Roman religion. That same disease has manifested itself right over here. We call it the free enterprise system, but if you look at it real close, you'll find that a lot of what we call Western mentality, Western society, has its basis in a far, far, far more ancient source. But, and that again is not my topic tonight, I just touch on that. So, what about this idea of evolution? Can something evolve into something else? One of the things that they talk about in evolution is this concept of something exploding. And this mass explodes, then it kind of like expands all over the universe. Somehow one of the planets, by one of the suns, is covered all over with water, and a blue-green algae comes up out of the water after it's there for a period of time. Then something has to come along and eat that. And then those things that are eating that, some kind of amoeboids or whatever, something has to come along and eat that. And then something bigger has to eat that. Where are these things coming from? This is amazing. And they gloss it. Go read the books. Go back and look at your science books again and see what they say. They use statements that sound like he said something. He didn't say anything. He just said like, I don't know, but he said it in such a way that it sounded like, oh yeah, that's a fact. The next concept is that these things in the water, we would call them fish, right? Something living in the water, reptiles or fish or something. All of a sudden, how do we get them on the land? Now that's pretty good. I like the way they do this. First, there's one idea. They become birds. How do they become birds? Well, you know, there's something you know, like just going over the top of the water and they're trying to jump up and get it. But what's that thing all of a sudden that's on top of the water that's flying up there? Where's that? Well, those are flies. Where'd they come from? Well, you know. But now the fish is going to jump up in there, and it keeps jumping up in there until someday they come up with these wings. That's pretty good. And somehow, a reptile, now a reptile, does anybody know about reptiles? This is cool. Reptiles are dense. They're very dense creatures. You know that? A snake is not very big, but if you weigh him by his size, he's heavy. Dense. Birds cannot be dense or they can't fly. Their bones are hollow. Do you know that? Bird bones. I didn't say bird brain, by the way. Bird brains are also hollow. That's what it says. Bird bones are hollow. How all of a sudden this reptile loses his density and now he can just jump out here and he's flying. Wait a minute. And his lungs, do you know the difference between the lungs of a bird and the lungs of a reptile? Inside the water, they have to have lungs which are more like the type that we have. where they come down in the little sacks, you know what I'm saying? But a bird doesn't work that way. It kind of goes through like an exhaust. It goes straight through. It's a totally different setup for a bird than it is for a human being, and definitely for a reptile. How do you justify that? Evolution. Oh, okay. Sorry. Oh, what's the matter with you? But if I use the name of my religion to cover up something, you won't accept that. If I say, well, a man can be born from a woman with no father, you say, how? I say, Islam. And you say, oh, okay. Because Islam teaches that. Islam tells us something even more amazing. That the first human on the earth was very, very big. He was huge. And he was only one. And he was created without a mother or a father. He was created by God, who just blew life into him. And if you question it, I'll just say Islam, and you'll go, oh, okay. Because if you want me to believe your religion, and you just say, evolution, oh, okay. The only reason evolution really hangs together, read this book, you gotta read it. Trust me. If you don't like it, I'll give you $10 back. You gotta like this book. Because this is what he explains in here very clearly. Why do you think this Darwinism, quote unquote, this idea of creationism versus evolution, why do you think this is such a big point? Because underneath it is materialism. Materialism, this means a class of people who want to rule the rest of the people. A class of people who've decided they are gods. They know more. They got more going for them, and you're just a bunch of cows. So, keep your religion, it's okay, you're a cow anyway. You're just a monkey, okay? I'm a higher monkey, up higher on the evolutionary scale than you. I'm going to wrap it up right about here.
And ask Allah to forgive all of us, and let's try to do better. Let's try to get closer to being a good Muslim on Allah's terms. Ameen. ربنا آتنا في الدنيا حسنة وفي الآخرة حسنة وقنا عذاب النار آمين اللهم إني ظلمت نفسي ظلما كثيرا ولا يغفر الذنوب إلا أنت فاغفر لي مغفرة من عندك وارحمني إنك أنت الغفور الرحيم اللهم صل على محمد وعلى آل محمد كما صليت على إبراهيم وعلى آل إبراهيم إنك حميد مجيد إن الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف المرسلين.
Been listening to Islam Today. You can visit us on the internet at IBN.net, the Islamic Broadcasting Network, where we're always open 24 hours a day and always plenty of free parking.
اللهم إني ظلمت نفسي ظلما كثيرا ولا يغفر الذنوب إلا أنت فاغفر لي مغفرة من عندك وارحمني إنك أنت الغفور الرحيم.
O Allah, I have indeed oppressed my soul excessively, and none can forgive sin except you. So forgive me a forgiveness from yourself, and have mercy upon me. Surely you are the most forgiving, the most merciful.
This program has been sponsored by the Islamic Media Foundation, sharing the guidance of Allah through broadcast media and the internet.
This is IBN, the Islamic Broadcasting Network.
The following program is sponsored by the Islamic Media Foundation, sharing the guidance of Allah through broadcast media and the internet.
A matter of law.
With your host,
Ashraf Nubani. Join us to discuss a matter of law. A matter of law.
Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you. This is Ashraf Nubani, your host of A Matter of Law. And thank you for joining us. I've been away for a couple of weeks, and I'm happy to be back here into the groove of things. We discuss those issues of the law that are of importance to the community, and we try to express them in lay terms so that our listening audience has an appreciation and an understanding for the way that the law works and how they can benefit from it. Today's guest, I'm happy to introduce, is Brother Muhammad Yusuf Muhammad, who works in civil practice with the government in labor and employment issues. And he's a graduate of the University of Georgia, and he's also barred in the states of Georgia and Maryland. And he will be discussing some of the broad issues related to his work. And he's also closely linked, and we'll find out how, to the National Association of Muslim Lawyers, and also the local gathering of Muslim lawyers in this area, in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area, to try to get an idea of what they do for the Muslim community and what his role in that is. Muhammad, thank you for coming on our show. It's a pleasure to have you.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Well, let us start a little bit about yourself. Tell us why you went into the practice of law.
Well, I guess a lot of different reasons. The biggest thing before me was the opportunity to make a difference, and I recognized a long time ago that the number of Muslims who were entering law was very, very few and far between. And at the time that I was growing up, you were lucky to know one person who was Muslim and was practicing law. And that was a big part of it. I realized that there was a big need that needed to be fulfilled, and in my small way, I thought I could participate in that. Having lived in the States pretty much most of my life, I thought it would be a good opportunity, a good career to go into, and something where I'd have the opportunity to make a difference, doing something that I find to be interesting.
Very good. And actually, even with the growing number of Muslims in law school and in law firms and government practice, there's still, I'm sure, a need for that. Going into that, can you tell us your experience in working in the government as opposed to private practice, and some of your comments on that for maybe law students who are about to graduate or will graduate soon and are looking into whether they should go into private practice or into government practice?
Sure. I've actually had the good fortune to, when I was in law school, I had a chance to intern with the district attorney's office in Georgia, so I had a chance to work at the local level. And after I graduated from law school, I worked in D.C. for a period of time, working with several law firms for a short while on specific projects, and that gave me an exposure into what private practice was like. I've been with the government now about 3 years and 3.5 years or so, and I found that in the government you can find that the work can be very, very rewarding. One of the things that's most obvious to people who come into the government fresh out of law school is that you will be handed a lot of responsibility very, very quickly. And that is very refreshing, as opposed to sometimes in private practice where you may not have that opportunity. And of course, from a client's point of view, the client is looking for results that a partner may be more able to deliver readily than an associate who's new. In the government, you have the opportunity to learn hands-on and very, very quickly. And in the organization that I'm with, I'm fortunate that we had some folks who were able to mentor me and help me get through those initial processes and to learn what things I needed to do. For example, once I entered the courtroom, and how to address the court reporter, for example, when I'm taking a deposition, basic things like that. But I learned those things very, very quickly. And there isn't much of an opportunity for hand-holding, given that the government's always looking for resources. But that's where the opportunity to excel or the opportunity to learn quickly and to tackle these challenges very readily present themselves.
Let me remind our listening audience that you can reach us here at the studio if you have any questions and or comments at 703-237-9199. Again, the number is 703-237-9199. Muhammad, we hear a lot that's actually what people students who graduate from law school use government practice as a way to gain experience and then go somewhere else. Now, because we want to attract people who have good minds and can help in government practice. What can you tell us about that?
I think that's probably a fair statement. Oftentimes, people do come to the government looking for experience, and they spend a bit of time there, and then they look for opportunities elsewhere. And that certainly is something the government presents, that opportunity to have that experience, to get that hands-on, you know, get into the trenches and work those cases very rigorously. Like I said, you won't get that opportunity in private practice, and perhaps one is now equipped to be able to make that transition successfully. On the other hand, I would argue that the government's also a good career and a good opportunity to be in an environment where you get to work hard, learn a lot. No two cases are often the same. And you also have the opportunity to pay attention to other things that may be important to you in your life. And for example, you know, if you're married or have children or have hobbies or civic activities that you like to be involved with, you always have the opportunity to do that when you're in the government. Your schedule normally is going to be your schedule will give, you know, you're not going to be working every weekend. I have friends who are in private practice who will tell you that oftentimes that involves working very long hours and very late hours. And the weekends, oftentimes they have to cancel plans at the last minute and that sort of thing. Of course, they are different lifestyles, and a person has to make that choice. Each one has its advantages and disadvantages. But if a person is looking for the government as an opportunity to learn skills, to learn them in a hands-on fashion, and go to private practice where oftentimes they may have more experience than even a partner, then I think it's a very, very good opportunity and a good place for a person to start their career.
Right. Okay. Changing gears, I understand you're also active with the National Association of Muslim Lawyers, and there's a local organization here for Muslim attorneys. Does that have a name? Is it incorporated, or is it part of the national? How is
Well, the two organizations are related to the extent that we have a lot of overlap in membership. They are not related formally, and part of that is because the national organization that we've been working on is in its formative years, so to speak. That organization is called the National Association of Muslim Lawyers, and I, as well as a whole bunch of friends and colleagues, you know, some are in private practice, some are in government, some are judicial clerks. You know, we all come from various walks of life, and we all, for some reason or another, in our personal interest, was to see a Muslim Bar Association in place. And there was an effort from quite some time to organize these folks. And actually, you know, I came into this effort fairly recently. And the organization, for those who are interested, can be reached at www.namelnet.org. And that organization, like I said, is a national one. We have, I believe, about 300 people that are involved with that organization. We've held two national conferences now, the last of which was, I believe, in February of this year, and it was very well attended, and we had speakers from around the country, and including several academics. The judicial clerk also spoke. It was a very good opportunity to meet with those folks.
What are some of the goals of this national organization?
Well, the organization's goals are primarily to maintain this network of individuals that we have gotten onto a good start of putting together. They do that by maintaining a listserv that people have an opportunity to share questions and concerns and inquiries. That's one thing that is part of its goal. The second part is to put on these national conferences. We've now held our second one, and the next one is planned for October of 2002, so a little over a year from now. And that would be an opportunity to continue to grow ourselves as an organization and to chart our future direction as well. The organization, my understanding is, in the long term, it will also be looking at doing those service projects that the community so desperately needs, like a legal defense fund and those sorts of things. Those are things that we are talking about, but they are still not in place. Like I said, we are a relatively young organization.
Right, but as of now, what the National Association of Muslim Lawyers, or the local D.C. Area of Muslim Lawyers, what can they do for the Muslim community or those seeking Muslim attorneys at this point? I mean, how can they benefit from this organization now?
Well, one of the things that's happened, I think with a good bit of frequency, is that if a person is interested in, they're looking for legal representation, and what they do is they go onto our website if they're looking for a Muslim attorney to represent them. They go onto our website, and there's a directory of attorneys that is maybe searchable. Some people have access and some don't. And for those people who do not have access, they can always email the administrator of the website, and that person will post to the general list and say, so-and-so needs an attorney in this area, part of the country, with this particular specialty, and people will respond to those inquiries directly. Now, you had asked me a little bit earlier about the local Washington, D.C. organization.
Right.
And that is something we have also been working on. Again, it's one of those efforts where I got involved at the tail end of it. But alhamdulillah, I've been involved with that for, I guess, about 3 or more years now. What we have tried to do is to bring together the attorneys in this city as well as those law students. We have quite a few law students between George Mason all the way up to Baltimore, and we want to bring those folks together. Again, if nothing else, what we try to do is to meet about once a month and to have dinner together. From time to time, we have a speaker who addresses a issue of importance to the Muslim community, particularly from a legal perspective. And we do that, like I said, about once a month. We have approximately 80 people on our list, which I think is pretty good considering that's the local D.C. area alone. For people who are interested in getting information on that, they can just send an email to muslimlawyer@yahoo.com, and I usually monitor that email address fairly regularly, and we can get back with them and get them on our email list if they're a law student or an attorney, or if they need to be put in touch with an attorney, we can put on there what the circumstances are for which they're seeking an attorney, and we can probably get them hooked up with somebody. Of course, as I mentioned earlier, this is a completely separate, this is something I do in my spare time and not related to my government practice.
Right, of course. And again, that's muslimlawyer@yahoo.com, muslimlawyer@yahoo.com. Again, let me remind our listeners that you can reach us here at the studio at 703-237-9199. That's 703-237-9199. If you have any questions or comments for our guest, Muhammad Yusuf Muhammad, who is an attorney in civil in civil practice with the civil litigation with the government, and who also is an active participant in the National American Muslim Lawyers Association and the local Muslim Lawyers Association. Or what is the official name? I'm sorry, did we get the official name?
Yes, the national organization is called the National Association of Muslim Lawyers.
And the local one?
The local one, we're working on it, and certainly
it's,
we're open
it's
to...
It's still nameless?
It's okay. Nameless. We are really, what we've done is we've formed informally, and mm-hmm. we found that forming a bureaucracy for organization, we're too small and too young to get involved in becoming too bureaucratic. So we've run things a little bit informally, and that's basically why we haven't held on to a name too long. But I guess a working name you may call is the Capital Area Muslim Bar Association.
Right. And actually, I attended a few of the events, and it's been successful in terms of getting law students and attorneys from both government and civil practice together, private practice together, and try to benefit the community and benefit ourselves in terms of networking and so forth. And I think that part of, you know, what the show actually will do, other than introducing these topics, is to introduce the community to these kinds things that are going on within the Muslim legal community that can be of benefit to the community. And you can ask questions and comments of Muhammad. He has a wide range of knowledge on these issues that involve the Muslim community and their ability to secure legal services. You know, amongst them, Muhammad, have you had any personal exposure to topics like arbitration, for example, within the Muslim community? Is that something that has been discussed in either the national organization or the local in terms of helping Muslims to solve some of their problems? Because it seems to be a powerful way and really a beneficial way for the Muslim community in terms of resolving disputes.
That's actually seems to be the trend that we're going towards as a community. One of the things that I have learned is that locally there's a group of individuals who are working diligently at trying to start an arbitration committee or meeting or group that people can submit their disputes to. And I know that Imam Johari Abdulmalik is involved with that effort, as well as Stevia, who's also a member of our organization. So there's quite a bit of variety of folks that are trying to get involved with this project and to make it successful. I can't speak about what's going on as a national effort, but locally that's what's going on.
Right. And just to let our audience know that basically arbitration is an alternative form of dispute resolution whereby parties in a wide range of disputes can solve their dispute through an arbitrator without having to go through the traditional judicial system, and it has its benefits. It's binding. It's supposed to be much faster because you're not just another case. The arbitrator will deal only with your case at the time, and it's dealt with relatively quickly, and it's binding, and it's a way for Muslims to resolve their disputes. Do we have a caller on the line? Caller, if you can just give us your first name and the city you're calling from. Go ahead. Assalamu alaikum.
My name is Muhammad Bahir, and I'm actually calling regardless the attorney.
Yes, Mr. Muhammad, if you have your radio, if you can turn it down or turn it off, it would help the feedback. Thanks.
Sure. Matter of fact, there was a sister here in Minneapolis, and she converted to Islam. And what happened that her husband was taking her to the court, trying to get her children from her. And in this time she was looking for all of them for a Muslim attorney to represent her. What happened, her husband took advantage of her.
Yes, and Muhammad, I'm sorry, can you please also raise your voice so it comes in clearer?
Okay. What I'm trying to do, I'm trying to get a Muslim attorney for this sister. If you can help me find a family.
Okay, we appreciate your call. What I'll do is I'll put you on hold, and we'll take down your phone number, and we'll post something on the internet, and hopefully someone will respond. What we'll do is make a posting, and if there's a Muslim attorney who can respond and help in the situation, they will. So if you can hold on the line, we'll have someone to take your name and phone number.
Sure.
Okay, thank you very much. See, that's the benefit. That's I think one of the great benefits of having the Muslim or attorney organizations to sort of help the Muslim community to find legal representation in different kinds of legal issues. What else, Muhammad? You graduated from Georgia and you came to this area. Have you been doing other things related with the law or the Muslim community that you would like to share with us, or has it been basically your government job and doing some of this volunteer work with these Muslim lawyers associations?
That's what I've tried to concentrate on, those things that I have familiarity with. It's probably not very good for me to try to venture away from that and probably not be very useful elsewhere. But that's what I've tried to keep my efforts towards. That's actually one of the things that we're working on right now, is how to get our local organization more structured and to get it to working in a more defined manner. It's actually a project that we're currently undertaking, and we have a group of our attorneys who's meeting regularly, and we're trying to become more formal in how we organize our events, and of course more formal in how we can attract guests to speak at our events.
Okay. We'll be right back after this break to take questions and comments that you may have at 703-237-9199. Welcome back to A Matter of Law. This is your host, Ashraf Nubani, and thank you for joining us and tuning in. It's a pleasure to be back after being away for a couple of weeks, and this is the show, A Matter of Law, where we try to make topics of the law interesting, and we try to bring interesting people on to discuss issues and to provide information that's important to the community in terms of legal matters. And as my guest, I have Muhammad Yusuf Muhammad, who works in government practice, and we've been discussing some of the things that he does, and also we've been discussing the shows, I'm sorry, not the shows, but the organizations that he is active with. Muhammad, going in terms of government practice, I understand that what you do is administrative. What is administrative law like, and what would the law student who's interested in doing government practice, similar to what you're doing, can expect in the administrative law field?
Well, the administrative law is basically, there's a series of courts inside the federal government, I guess, that most of the people don't know much about, and probably for their benefit they don't. Mm-hmm. But what the administrative courts are, they're part of the executive branch. They're not actually part of the judicial branch. And as people know, you know, the government's divided into the executive, the judicial, and the legislative branch. While the executive branch has these agency courts within it, and each agency, or some of the federal agencies, not all of them, have their own internal courts. And they have different rules of evidence, and they're a little bit different in how we as attorneys approach our cases. They can be somewhat informal. It depends on the judge, and depends on the particular court. And that is a completely separate animal in and of itself. In those cases, we have judges who have usually particular expertise in that area. And we also are presenting our cases before just that single judge, not before a panel and not before a jury. So, and that becomes, you know, the limiting area. One of the things that I think that people, particularly law students coming into this, should realize, that administrative practice tends to move very, very quickly and very fast. And the best way really to describe it is when you hear on the radio or TV that a certain agency has gone after such and such company and fined them. Well, how does it fine them? And how does it issue this fine to them? Well, the way it works is if the company decides this is, you know, it's like when you get a traffic ticket. Well, they want to challenge it, so they go before an administrative court.
Right.
And that's how the process gets rolling. And that's the sort of thing that I get involved with.
All right. We'll pick up on that if we can. I think we have a caller on the line. Caller, if you can give us your first name and the city you're calling from.
Safe, Falls Church, Virginia.
Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam. Question for you, Muhammad. I know a lot of these courts are under specific executive agencies, and a lot of the time the lawyers that or the government attorneys that handle the cases are also working for that same agency. How does the government maintain fairness when both the judges and the lawyers are working for the same person?
Well, actually, that's a very good question, but I think it's actually pretty easy. I think those judges work really hard to make sure that they are perceived as impartial and that they treat the parties as such. One of the things that helps to assure that there's fairness in the process is that once a case is presented before these administrative courts, and if the case doesn't turn out the way, whether the government or the private party, if they don't like the way the decision has ultimately come out, they can always appeal eventually at some step in the process to the United States Court of Appeals and take it into the Circuit Court of Appeals there. And those are obviously all around the country, and they have a chance to take the make their claim there.
Okay, and thank you, caller, for that question. So picking up on, because immigration actually is what I do, and very very few people realize that that's actually administrative law, and administrative law within, of course, government practice is a big part of the law that is practiced there. And on administrative law, so what so can you give us sort of a rundown of the different agencies in general that actually have administrative law in that capacity within the government?
My memory is kind of weak, so I'll tell you, you know, mention a couple that I know that exist. For example, cases that OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, would bring about, those cases would be heard by the Occupational Safety and Health Review Commission. And that is a separate body, as the previous caller had asked about. This is actually what we refer to as the OSHRC. They are actually a separate body outside of OSHA altogether. That's one, for example. Another would be the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. They have their own administrative law judges and their own commission.
Right, involved in employment discrimination.
That's correct. Okay. That's correct. And the my understanding, and you can probably speak better on this, is the Immigration and Naturalization Service. They have their own administrative
Part
law
of the
judges.
Justice Department, right. Okay.
And again, I believe the EPA, the FAA, all of these, I believe, have their own administrative law judges. And again, those can proceed from that fora to the U.S. Court of Appeals.
Right. Okay. And Muhammad, and before we run out of time, any other, if you have any closing comments or remarks, especially for maybe law students who are interested in pursuing careers in the government, the things that they should prepare for or look towards in preparation for that?
Well, I think that people should look at practicing law, particularly in this area, as a great opportunity to make a difference. The Washington, D.C. area has a lot of opportunity to either be involved on the Hill or to be involved in private practice or with the government. And in those endeavors, a person can really have that opportunity to make a difference. I know it sounds a little cliche, but that's but you start, you know, with each small step. And that's what I think is the law student should really look at, is what he or she wants to accomplish in their career. Obviously, there's the opportunity to make, you know, a good bit of money in this career, but if you work for the government or in private, non-governmental agencies or organizations, there won't be that particular aspect of it, but there's also other benefits like the quality of life and, again, the opportunity to make the difference.
Right. I'm sure it'll be rewarding. And on that note, to both parents who may be listening and or law students, I think that this is valuable information for Muslim attorneys and Muslim lawyers who are interested in Muslim students who are interested in pursuing this as a career. In closing, thank you, Muhammad Yusuf Muhammad, for coming on our show. And Muhammad Yusuf is in civil practice with the government and is also involved with the National Association of Muslim Lawyers and the local Association of Muslim Lawyers here in the D.C. area. And we thank him for sharing his thoughts and answering our questions and the questions of the listeners. This is your host, Ashraf Nubani. We will be with you next week for another edition of A Matter of Law. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
This program has been sponsored by the Islamic Media Foundation, sharing the guidance of Allah through broadcast media and the Internet.
Sponsor a program on the Islamic Broadcasting Network, IBN. Expose your organization or business name to the listeners of IBN in the Washington, D.C. metro area and nationwide and worldwide through our live internet broadcast. Support IBN Dawah efforts. Make the call and sponsor a program today. Get your name into thousands of homes nationwide and worldwide. For more information, call IBN at 703-241-9659.
This is IBN, the Islamic Broadcasting Network. The following program is sponsored by the Islamic Media Foundation, sharing the guidance of Allah through the broadcast media and the Internet.
A, B,
RC. Test your knowledge on IBN.
With your host, Henna Baba.
Assalamu alaikum and welcome to this week's edition of A, B, or C here on IBN, the Islamic Broadcasting Network. I'm your host, Hana. And as you know by now, A, B, or C is our weekly game show, the first game show on Islamic radio in America. Hope all together to gain more knowledge about the world, about Islam, and, you know, have just some fun at the end of this long work week. So let's start the competition. Is it A, B, or C?
Or C.
Okay, let's introduce our teams for this week. First of all, we have the red team. Please introduce yourself, your name, and what city you're from. Red team, over here.
My name is Babak Nuri. I'm from Virginia, Fairfax.
All right, and his teammate is?
Assalamu alaikum. My name is Sarah. I'm from Columbia, Maryland.
Columbia, Maryland. Thank you for being here. And our blue team, over there. Let's introduce ourselves, please.
Assalamu alaikum, my name is Ayman and I'm from Virginia, Fairfax.
Fairfax, Virginia. And his teammate?
My name is Abdul Malik and I am from Reston, Virginia.
You had to think about it for a little bit. Yeah, you had to remember where you live.
I've been all over.
Okay, well, those are our teams for today. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for being on the show. And as you know, each team has a color to represent it. The red team over here and the blue team. The game is made up of four rounds. All questions are multiple choice, which makes it kind of easy, actually. And the team with the most points at the end of the game wins. Questions will be either in Islamic knowledge or the humanities, like geography or history, English, or the sciences and general information. So good luck to both teams. And if everybody's ready, we can start with round one on A, B, or C. Right, round one is called the toss-up round. It's made up of as many questions as you can answer in about 15 minutes. The questions are toss-ups for whichever team calls out its color first. So if you know the answer, you can call out your color and try to answer the question. If you answer it wrong, I'll repeat it for the other team, and if they get it right, they steal your points. Not a pretty sight at all. So I'm asking you to please let me complete the question before you start answering. When I start saying the answers, you can answer. And again, this round is about 15 minutes. You have about 15 seconds to answer each question when you call out your caller. But again, please wait for me to finish the exact question. And we are going to start playing A, B, or C. Question one for both teams. Call out your caller if you know the answer. Question one. On which ocean would you find the most shipping? Is it A, the Pacific, B, the Atlantic, or C, the Indian?
Blue.
Red team?
Atlantic.
That's correct. 10 points for the red team. Good start right there. The most shipping you would find is not on the Pacific, not on the Indian, definitely not in the Arctic. It's in the Atlantic. Good job. Next question. In which surah can you find the name Maryam mentioned more? Would that be A, Al-Imran, B, Al-Ma'idah, or C,
Blue.
Maryam itself? Blue?
Al-Imran.
Sorry, wrong answer. It's not Al-Imran. Red team, you can steal it. In what surah can you find the name Maryam said more? Is it B, Al-Ma'idah, or C, Maryam itself?
Surah Maryam.
I'm sorry, that's still wrong. Good guess, though, but that was a trick question. Al-Ma'idah is where you can find the name Maryam mentioned more, 26 times, actually. Next question, both teams. When did television become a new feature in American homes? Was it A, between the two world wars, B, during the 40s, or C, during the 50s?
Blue
team.
During the 40s.
Sorry, wrong answer. Red team, you can steal it. When did television become a new feature in American homes? Was it A, between the two world wars, or C, during the 50s?
That would be C, during the 50s.
That is correct. Good job. Another 10 points for the red team. 20 points right there. Next question for both teams. Which surah in the Quran hinted to the nearing of the Prophet's death? It hinted to the nearing of the Prophet's death. Was it A, Surah An-Nasr, B, Ash-Sharh, or C, Ar-Rum? Take a guess, somebody. Red. Red team? A? That's correct! I could tell that was a guess, but you got it. There you go. An-Nasr is the surah that hinted to the nearing of the Prophet ﷺ's death. Next question, both teams. What is the number 8 in the French language? Is it A, quatre, B, cinq, or C,
blue.
Huit, blue?
C.
That's correct. You know your French language, and the first 10 points for the blue team, huit, is the number 8 in French. Next question for both teams. Rawalpindi is a city found in which Muslim country? Would that be A, Pakistan, B, Bangladesh, or C, Indonesia?
Red.
Red team?
Bangladesh.
I'm sorry, that's the wrong answer. Blue team, you can steal it. Rawalpindi is found in which Muslim country? Is it A, Pakistan, or C, Indonesia?
C.
I'm sorry, that's still wrong. It's been in the news for a while. Rawalpindi is in Pakistan. Next question for both teams. Which of the following trees grows taller than any other tree? Is it A, the great oak, B, the redwood?
Blue.
Red. Blue team?
The redwood.
That's correct.
Yes, all right.
All right, another 10 points.
Okay.
Redwood is the tree that grows taller than any other. Next question for both teams. Which of the following surahs is a Mekki surah, which means it was revealed in Mecca, not in Medina? Was it A, Al-Hajj, B, Al-Mu'minun, or C, An-Nur?
Blue.
Blue team?
A.
Nope, sorry. Red team, you can steal it. Which of the following surahs was revealed in Mecca? Was it B, Al-Mu'minun, or C, An-Nur? Is it C, Nur?
No.
Nope. Al-Mu'minun is the surah that was revealed in Mecca, not in Medina. Next question, both teams. Where were the 1988 Olympic Games held? Was it A, in Seoul, South Korea, B, in Berlin, Germany, or C, in Mexico City?
Red.
Red team.
Seoul, North Korea?
Seoul, South Korea. I'll take it. Yes, that's right. All right, and in Seoul, South Korea, 88 Olympic Games. Next question for both teams. The Prophet, peace be upon him, told this relative that he or she will be the first to pass away after him.
Blue.
Blue.
Fatima.
That's correct. Good job. I didn't even have to say the answers. His daughter, Fatima, he told her that she's going to be the first one to pass away after he goes. Next question, both teams. A gander is the male gender
Blue.
Of what type of bird? Blue?
A goose.
That's correct. Another 10 points. A goose and a gander. That's the male and female. All right. Next question. Both teams. In what city was the first university established in the Islamic world?
Blue.
Blue?
What city?
Yes.
Cairo.
Nope. Sorry. I think you're on a roll there. You have to wait for the answers.
Exactly. Okay.
Red team, you can seal it. In what city was the first university established in the Islamic world? Was it A, Baghdad, or B, Fez?
A.
Nope, still sorry. Actually, I knew this for the first time here. It's in Fez, or Fez, in Morocco, in the year 589 AD.
Wow.
A lot of people think it's Al-Azhar. Next question for both teams. Fidel Castro became leader of Cuba after a revolution in what year? Was it A, 1949, B, 1959, or C, 1969?
Red.
Red team.
1969.
I'm sorry. B, go ahead and try to steal it. Fidel Castro became leader of Cuba after a revolution in what year? Was it 1949 or 1959?
59.
That's correct. Good job. And that's another 10 points right there for the blue team. Next question for both teams. What insect is an aardvark's favorite food?
Blue.
Blue team?
Ants.
That's correct. You know your aardvark. An aardvark is an anteater. They eat ants. Next question for both teams. Which Muslim scientist is known everywhere as the father of chemistry?
Red.
Red team.
Zakaria Razi?
I'm sorry, that's the wrong answer. So close. I wish I could give it to you. Blue team, you can steal it. Which Muslim scientist is the father of chemistry? Is it A, Jabir ibn Hayyan, B, al-Khawarizmi, or C, Ibn Khaldun?
A?
That's correct. All right, Jabir ibn Hayyan is known as the father of chemistry to the world. That means that's the end of round one today on A, B, or C. And so far, not bad. Blue team, 70 points. Red team, 30 points. Red team has a little catching up to do. But that you can definitely do in the coming rounds because it might get a little harder, but you will be able to win more points. Hope everybody's having fun and hope everybody who's listening to us is also enjoying this. Remember, if you want to be a contestant on A, B, or C, all you have to do is email me. My email is abc@ibn.net. abc@ibn.net. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back on A, B, or C.
He's lazy. She's stupid. He's a racist. That one's greedy. And there's a terrorist.
If you look at people and all you see are labels, everyone loses.
Labels hurt all of us and they're wrong.
Every one of us is unique, a one-of-a-kind original.
Every one of us is a one-of-a-kind original.
Every one of us is a one-of-a-kind original. Our diversity is our strength. Instead of stereotyping, we can all learn from each other.
Don't let prejudice shape your view. Take the time to get to know people and see for yourself who they really are.
We are all one, one of a kind.
Stereotyping is wrong, and it hurts all of us. Stop stereotyping.
A message from your American Muslim neighbors and the Islamic Media Foundation.
A, B, or C.
You're back on A, B, or C, the first Islamic game show in America. I'm your host, Hanat Baba, on IBN, the Islamic Broadcasting Network. It's a wonderful afternoon here in Washington, D.C. And we have two teams with us who are competing today. The red team, please introduce yourselves again, your name and what city you're from.
Assalamu alaikum. My name is Bob Aknuri. I'm from Northern Virginia, Fairfax.
All right. And his teammate.
Assalamu alaikum. My name is Sarah. I'm from Columbia, Maryland.
Columbia, Maryland. And over to the blue team. Introduce yourselves, please.
Assalamu alaikum. My name is Ayman, and I'm from Fairfax, Virginia.
Fairfax and his teammate.
My name is Abdul Malik, and I'm from Weston.
Okay, nobody's chasing you, but thank you very much. And just for everybody's knowledge, until now the blue team is leading with 70 points, red team 30 points. And if everybody's ready, we're going to go on to round two on A, B, or C. Round two is called Team Challenge. In this round, each team is going to answer alone with no interference from the other team. Answer as many questions as you can in about 7 minutes. We'll start with the team that's leading so far. That's the blue team. Remember, there's no need to call out your team name in this round, so red team, take a rest for a while. Again, blue team, you have about 15 seconds for each question. Each question in this round is worth 20 points. So you can go ahead. You ready, blue team? You're fine?
Oh, okay.
All right. Let's start. A, B, or C. Question one for the blue team. What does the E in ESP stand for? Is it A, extra, B, extraordinary, or C, external? ESP.
Extra.
That's correct. Good job. 20 points right there. Extrasensory perception. That's what ESP stands for. Next question, blue team. How long did the Prophet, peace be upon him, live in Medina? Was it A, 10 years, B, 12 years, or C, 15 years?
C, 15.
I'm sorry, it's a wrong answer. And the correct answer is 10 years.
Yeah,
in El Medina. Next question for the blue team. The Trojan horse was a clever way that the city of Troy was conquered by whom? Was it A, the Turks, B, the Greeks, or C, the Romans? Trojan horse. Who do you think of when you think of that? Give it a guess. Yes.
Romans.
Sorry, wrong answer. Actually, it was the Greeks, the Trojan horse. They conquered Troy by the Trojan horse, the Greeks. Next question, blue team. In chemistry, which of the following metals is not magnetic? Would that be A, copper, B, iron, or C, steel? What's not magnetic?
Copper.
That's correct. Copper is not magnetic. I bet a lot of people are going to go see today if it is or not. Try it out.
Stick a magnet on a pin.
Next question for the blue team. Which of the following Muslim scientists is famous for his travels and geographical studies? Would that be A, Ibn Sina, B, Ibn Rushd, or C, Ibn Battuta?
Ibn Battuta.
Correct. Another 20 points for the blue team. Ibn Battuta, famous for his travels and geographical studies around the world. Next question for the blue team. Who was the first to document the sayings or hadith of the Prophet, peace be upon him? Was it A, Muhammad ibn Muslim, B, al-Bukhari, or C, Abdullah ibn Umar?
Bukhari.
Good try, but wrong.
It was C, wasn't it? It was C.
It wasn't C either. No. Actually, Muslim
was
the first to actually document and write down the sayings of the Prophet, peace be upon him. Next question for the blue team. Which of the following languages is the most widely spoken language in the world? Is it A, English, B, Mandarin, or C, French?
French.
Nope, sorry.
English.
Isn't that funny? It's not English and it's not French. It's Mandarin.
Oh, really? Mandarin?
Because there are 695 million Chinese in the world. So
wow.
Kind of tricky, but.
I always thought Mandarin was like a type of, you know, tea.
Fruit, that too.
Yeah.
Next question. Blue team. What is the first Arab country in which oil was discovered? Would that be A, Saudi Arabia, B, Bahrain, or C, Egypt?
Bahrain.
No. That's why you need to confer with your teammate always.
Sorry.
It's funny.
My bad, you know.
It's funny that Egypt actually was the first Arab country where oil was discovered. A lot of people wouldn't know that. All right, next question for the blue team. Which African country used to be named the Gold Coast? Is it A, Ghana, B, Niger, or C, Ethiopia?
Ghana.
Correct. Finally, a right answer from the blue team. Ghana used to be called the Gold Coast. That's correct. And blue team, your time is over for round two. Not a bad job at all. But now we have to see how the red team is going to do in the same round. So let's switch to the red team. All right, red team, here we go. And the first question for you is, as its flag shows, which country calls itself the land of the rising sun? Would that be A, Japan, B, China, or C, Malaysia?
That would be A, Japan.
Correct. 20 points. It's very clear on its flag. Looks like a rising sun, Japan. Next question for the red team. In which section of the Quran, which means juz of the Quran, can you find Surah Ibrahim? Would that be in the third juz, or B, the 13th, or C, the 30th? Is it the third? I'm sorry, wrong. That sound is so annoying, isn't it? I would hate to be in your shoes. But it's the 13th section in the Quran where you can find Surah Ibrahim. Next question for the red team. In which island country can you find the world's oldest parliament? Would that be A, England, B, Iceland, or C, Greenland? England? Nope. Funny enough. Tricky questions with new pieces of information for everybody. Iceland actually has the world's oldest parliament. Who think they don't even have a parliament? Next question. In Islam, if a woman passes away leaving a child, who has custody over the child? Would that be A, the mother's mother, B, the father's mother, or C, the father?
Would that be C, the father?
No. In Islam, a child always goes to the mother or the mother's mother right after that. Doesn't go to the father because it's a child and it needs a woman at that stage. Next question. In 1774, the English chemist Priestley discovered this gas during an experiment with mice. Was it A, oxygen, B, nitrogen, or C, hydrogen in 1774 in England?
Is that nitrogen?
No, it's not. That would be oxygen, discovered by chance during an experiment in 1774. Next question for the red team. How can a person still gain rewards or ajr after they have passed away? Is it A, they can't, B, by leaving a pious son behind, or C, by being buried among Muslims? Is it B? That's correct. Good job. That's one of the ways that you can still get reward even after you're gone. Leave behind a pious son. Next question for the red team. Where are the thousand islands that the salad dressing was named after? Is it A, in North America, B, somewhere in the Pacific, or C, around Greenland? North America, that's correct. Good job. Thousand Island Dressing. There are 1,500 islands around in St. Lawrence River, North America. Next question for the blue team. In the legendary story of the Pied Piper of Hamelin, where is Hamelin? Is it A, in Austria, B, in Holland, or C, in Germany? Pied Piper.
Holland?
No, I'm sorry. Germany. Hamelin is in Germany. Don't feel bad. I would have never known this if I didn't have to read about it. Next question for you. What Hijri month are we currently in? Is it A, Dhul Qa'ida, B, Dhul Hijjah, or C, Safar? B, that's correct. Red team, another 20 points. We are in Dhul Hijjah right now. Next question for the red team. Which is true? A rainbow can be seen, A, only in the morning, B, only at sunset, or C, at night and day. Rainbow. At night and day. Correct. Good job. You guys are on a roll. Mashallah. Rainbow can be seen at night and it can be seen at day. Either moonlight or sunlight. It all works. Next question. Enoch is the English name for which prophet of Allah? Would that be A, Shu'aib, B, Idris, or C, Hud? Enoch. E-N-O-C-H.
C?
No, I'm sorry. That would be Idris. And that is the end of round 2-4. The red team also, and the red team actually now has 100 points, blue team 80 points in this round alone. But we'll come back, find out what the total is so far. Don't go anywhere. For all of you listening to us, thank you for being with us. We'll be right back with more on A, B, or C.
IBN is your voice, the voice of American Muslims. Let us know what you think of our program. Give us your comments and suggestions. Email us at feedback@ibn.net. That's feedback@ibn.net. Or send us a fax at 703-241-9658. That's 703-241-9658. Your opinion counts.
A, B, or C?
Back with A, B, or C here on IBN, the Islamic Broadcasting Network. And we're on to round three right now on A, B, or C. We have the red team composed of Babak and Sarah, and the blue team, Ayman and Malik. And you'll both be happy to know, or not happy, I don't know, that you're both tied right now at 150 points each. So you're at the same level, everybody, which is good. Yeah.
Good.
Okay, okay. Sound engineer is giving you a little cheer. What?
Can we tie on the show? I mean, like, can we end the show with a tie?
You might. You never know. You never know. It is very possible. Allahu alam. Never know. So, let's get back to the game. Let's get back to A, B, or C, round three. All right, round three is called It's Your Choice. In this round, again, you'll answer alone with no interference from the other team. And